Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. President Trump talks a lot about America First. It's easy to imagine the rest of the world wanting to know exactly what that means. This morning at the United Nations in New York, the world got to hear directly from a very unusual president of the United States. We want to hear and think about what he had to say. Here's a little bit from the president this morning at the UN in New York.
As president of the United States, I will always put America first. Just like you, as the leaders of your countries, will always and should always put your countries first.
And the world, what kind of state is it in? Major portions, the president said, going to hell.
Major portions of the world are in conflict, and some, in fact, are going to hell. But the powerful people in this room, under the guidance and auspices of the United Nations, can solve many of these vicious and complex problems.
With us to look at the president's address to the United Nations, Yoki Driessen, Deputy Managing Foreign Editor at Vox. Yoki Driessen, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
And with us from New York, Richard Haass, President of the Council on Foreign Relations and author of A World in Disarray, American Foreign Policy and the Crisis of the Old Order. Richard Haass, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Richard Haass, first to you, how would you generally characterize this speech to the UN?
Well, the word that comes to mind and comes to mind and comes to mind is sovereignty. And the president seemed to be speaking as much to Americans who probably view the UN with considerable mistrust as anybody else. And I think he was trying to square his America First doctrine with working with the UN. But I think the lead story besides that will be the extraordinarily harsh rhetoric towards both North Korea and Iran. In some ways, he resurrected two-thirds of the axis of evil.
Let's listen to just a little bit of that. As on North Korea first, the president saying the U.S., threatening here to totally destroy North Korea.
The United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea.
And bringing to the floor of the UN his kind of, ribald, what is it, nickname for the North Korean leader?
Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States is ready, willing and able, but hopefully this will not be necessary. That's what the United Nations is all about. That's what the United Nations is for.
Yoki Driessen, you were listening. Here's the President of the United States talking about totally destroying North Korea, talking about Rocket Man on a suicide mission. How do you picture this hitting the international community listening in that room and from capitals well beyond?
Hi, Tom. There are a couple of moments, literal moments, where you got a sense of how some world leaders, at least the ones in that hall, were reacting. At one point, Trump gave what was clearly meant to be an applause line, and he paused, waiting for the applause, and then none came. And you could see on his face from the camera that he was a bit taken aback by you heard one person clapping. It was like the literal definition of smattering. Later on, when he was talking about Venezuela and about socialism, he had a line about how Venezuela showed that socialism was basically a completely failed ideology, and people were laughing. There was actual laughter in the room, not with him, but at him. So, you know, in at least small senses, you had reactions that no American president might have witnessed or been subjected to in the last 10, 20 years. But I can say, honestly, I've never heard a speech quite like this. I mean, this sounded not like a presidential speech to the UN. This sounded like a campaign speech from 2016. It sort of had all the highlights, from profanity like the world's going to hell, to tough talk about going to totally destroy another country, to using a personal attack on another leader. I mean, calling somebody Rocket Man was just kind of extraordinary to me. There was one other thing that jumped out. H.R. McMaster, Donald Trump's national security advisor, has for months been begging him not to use the phrase radical Islamic terrorism, because he feels like that's a phrase that alienates much of the Muslim world, and Trump used it. So this wasn't the kind of speech that people who had hoped you might see from this more moderate president that a lot of people had continued to cling to the hope might be lurking there somewhere. This was the full-throated populist Donald Trump of the campaign trail, and I think that would be very jarring to people who hope for something different.
Richard Haass, what are the implications of the consequences of a speech, a campaign-style speech without the applause track, for the United States in terms of rallying global support for the issues that President Trump says he cares most about?
Well, I think the principal result of the speech will be the leadership of North Korea will be more persuaded than ever that they are right to be developing nuclear weapons and long-range ballistic missiles.
Why?
Because they see those as guarantees of their survival. And the hostility of the speech toward the leadership of North Korea and towards the people of North Korea, I believe, will just reinforce their sense that those countries that gave up nuclear weapons, Ukraine, Iraq, and Libya, were foolish to do so. I also think that in Iran, this will just reinforce their sense that the United States and Iran are on some kind of a collision course. Iran has already been expanding its wings, so to speak, throughout the region, and I think that will simply continue. One of the big question marks of the speech, and I think the Iranians will be more than a little bit curious where we come out, is the president hinted but didn't exactly say what the United States would be doing vis-a-vis the U.S.-Iran nuclear pact. And I think they're waiting to see whether we introduce new sanctions, whether we exit the accord, and then they will respond after that.
Here's the president on Iran and the Iran nuclear deal today.
The Iran deal was one of the worst and most one-sided transactions the United States has ever entered into. Frankly, that deal is an embarrassment to the United States, and I don't think you've heard the last of it, believe me.
Yerky Driessen, U.S. credibility enhanced here, or the opposite? I mean, Richard Haass says this will lead North Korea to dig in and think it made the right choice in going nuclear, but the president is threatening the total destruction, literally saying the total destruction of North Korea. On Iran, he's not acting as though he's constrained there, but Richard Haass says it may, in fact, get Iran to dig in. So what's the impact?
You know, I think you could also add a couple of other countries. You know, he, in the past, had mocked President Obama for his red line speech, Obama's red line speech, mm-hmm. about how if Bashar al-Assad in Syria used chemical weapons, the U.S. would use military force. This was like a Trump attack line for several years now. But although Trump didn't use the phrase red line, he basically set out red lines for both Venezuela and arguably Syria, where in Venezuela, where there's a gigantic crackdown being carried out now by its president, Nicolas Maduro, he said the U.S. was prepared to further sanction it, to take other steps. In Syria, he again threatened to respond if there's use of a chemical weapon, to say that Bashar al-Assad was a dictator who'd abuse his own people, and sort of lay out, theoretically, ways in which he could box himself into a corner, not just with North Korea, which I agree with Richard, would listen to this and think we have to develop weapons faster, nor with Iran, which would listen to this and think we should prepare for being free of the strictures of this nuclear deal, but also in Venezuela and Syria. It's not clear to me, just sort of as a meta point, whether he has yet fully grasped that when you say something as president, whether it's an attack like Rocket Man, whether it's a policy thing like totally destroy, which has it in implicit military threats, that when you say that, there is enormous weight to those words. It's not clear to me that he gets that, and that's a somewhat scary thing to be wondering about when we're talking about a president more than 8 months into his presidency, but this is not the kind of speech you would have ever heard from, forget President Obama, but think back to President Nixon, Republican presidents. This was not something that you would have heard from either party, and it's something that is not just, I think, painting him into a corner, but something that could lead to other nations reacting in the exact opposite way than Donald Trump wants.
But he came looking, it seems, for cooperation. Here he was saying it's time for countries to work together.
It is time for all nations to work together to isolate the Kim regime until it ceases its hostile behavior.
Richard Haass, first of all, let's just pause for another moment on the U.S. president threatening the total destruction before the UN of North Korea, and your assertion that this would lead to North Korea digging in harder on nuclear weapons, does he have any follow-through? What does this do to the credibility of the United States if indeed that's the outcome of this? And how does it color the American call for international cooperation on this front?
Well, it will come off a bit as menacing, a bit as bluster. Look, there was a contradiction in the speech. The president was actually quite mild compared to what you might have expected when he talked about the UN directly. He was not overly critical of the UN. He actually had some positive or conditionally positive things to say. But then his rhetoric towards both North Korea and Iran was just the sort of thing that will not increase international support for U.S. policy. So again, there's a kind of contradiction. He wasn't anti-UN per se, but the rhetoric seemed to me counterproductive because it would make others less rather than more likely to follow the American lead towards the two countries he essentially put forward as the biggest threats to regional and world peace.
Why less likely in the case of North Korea, even if he didn't sound, perhaps this was language that other world leaders might not use, but it almost seemed as though he perhaps was trying to frighten other countries into supporting the U.S. on this. Otherwise, total destruction, that sounds like nuclear war, and you know we're off to an unknowable future.
Well, just you're exactly right. When phrases like total destruction do not result from conventional weapons, and in the case of Iran, he seemed to threaten some version of regime change. No, what this will do is make it look as though the United States is not interested in some type of a compromise. Remember, with the case of Iran, the UN has certified that Iran is in compliance with this agreement that the president criticized outright. In the case of North Korea, the Chinese have put forward this idea that North Korea would freeze its nuclear and missile testing programs in exchange for a freeze on American and South Korean military exercises. Many Americans, including myself, find that unacceptable, but this administration's never come forward with an alternative. What would we be willing to put forward in exchange for a freeze on North Korean programs? So it reinforced the sense that we're not interested in a diplomatic outcome, and that will isolate us more than it will isolate North Korea.
We're looking at President Trump's speech today before the United Nations in New York. He also spoke there about America's role in the world, and sovereignty was the word you used, but putting America's interest first, America first, is the backdrop. Here was the president this morning.
As president of the United States, I will always put America first. Just like you, as the leaders of your countries, will always and should always put your countries first.
Yoki Driessen is with us, Deputy Managing Editor, Foreign Editor at Vox. Yoki, how does that square with the sensibility of the United Nations about global cooperation? Can you have it both ways?
You know, Tom, I think that's a great question, and it is very hard to square. I mean, as was some of the more specific things, you know, that he referenced, particularly in the case of North Korea. On the one hand, he never said the word China when he was speaking of North Korea, except later in the speech to vaguely say they had been helpful. But he talked somewhat at length about how no country on earth should help North Korea, should work with North Korea, should trade with North Korea, do business with North Korea. There's one country above all doing all those things, which is China, and he refused to call them out. But taking his logic and putting it simply on North Korea and China, even there it falls apart, to say nothing. And I agree that it's inconsistent with the UN, which is set up to be a place where nations come together to find and sign international pacts. If you're China and you're taking Donald Trump's logic and looking out for your own interests alone, you would do what China is doing now, which is not pressuring North Korea particularly hard, not putting in place harsh sanctions, doing nothing to topple the North Korean government, instead trying to keep that government in place because you fear a unified Korea that would be an ally of the United States. So if you are taking Donald Trump's logic and simply putting it on the issue he seems to care about the most, which is North Korea, it would lead to other countries doing, again, the opposite of what he wants them to do. And the speech was internally inconsistent, both about how you square that with the UN and the UN's charter, but even with how you square it with the specific policy questions of North Korea.
I'm Tom Ashbrook.
Can I just follow up on that? Okay.
Yes, Richard.
So China. The Chinese aren't happy with North Korean missile or nuclear programs, but they also want North Korea to continue to exist. They want to have a buffer state there. They don't want to have a united peninsula. So in a narrow analysis, a China-first approach to the situation, some Chinese are going to hear that and say, well, we'll just continue to stand by North Korea because nothing short of its destruction or at least its dismantling of all of its weapon programs will ever be adequate for the United States. I don't think having a world in which everybody thinks of their own things first exclusively is what the United States wants. Sure, we keep our sovereign rights to decide, but what we want the United States and other countries to do is see that there are some common interests. This idea that you've got to choose between sovereignty and collective action seems to me dead wrong.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And then this, the president today telling world leaders that the United States would not push others to adopt American values.
In America, we do not seek to impose our way of life on anyone, but rather to let it shine as an example for everyone to watch.
Richard Haass, is that a change? Is that a new philosophy from an American president?
Well, it's certainly different than the last two administrations, and it's certainly at odds somewhat with the Wilsonian tradition in American foreign policy, where we do try to spread democracy and our values around the world, where, and there's been a big debate on that, to be honest, in American foreign policy. Where the president comes up short, though, is if he is that concerned about the example we set, it's hard to argue that the example he has set over the last 8 months has helped the cause of democracy. With his attack on the media, his attack on the courts, none of these things is consistent with the appeal of democracy, and his cozying up to Russia or the Philippine president or the Turkish president, again, is inconsistent with that. So, again, I think it's legitimate to say we're not going to try to impose our preferences on others, but then you can't say we're going to fall back on our example when we've tarnished our own example.
Let it shine as an example for everyone to watch, the president said this morning. We'll see how that example is received abroad. Richard Haass, President of the Council on Foreign Relations, author of A World in Disarray. Thank you very much for being with us to look at the President's remarks today.
Thanks for having me.
And Yoki Driessen, Deputy Managing Editor and Foreign Editor at Vox. Yoki, thank you as always for joining us.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you.